Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transform. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great. Doing great.
We are rocking and rolling with another three-show week. We've made it to the middle of the week, hump day. And you know what I thought would be fun to do tonight?
Well, it looks like a show about amazing stuff. But
I thought it'd be fun to talk about some amazing stuff. And you know what? If we have time, talk about some more amazing stuff. But, you know,
that's right.
Me.
Well, I was all keyed up to, you know, have a show about, you know, mundane stuff. But if you insist, Phil, we're going to go with amazing stuff instead of that. So
yeah, I thought about mundane stuff, boring stuff, stuff that makes you go, eh. But I felt that for this show, it would even be better to do amazing stuff. So
all right, okay.
We're gonna do some amazing stuff, and time permitting, more amazing stuff.
Okay.
We got cool gadgets and inventions, world-changing technologies, and you know what, Stephen? Precious little time to talk about it. We've loaded this show with so much good futuristic awesomeness that I think all we can do is just kind of plow through it. Am I right, or am I right? I mean,
just go hit it, man.
The time will be done before we've even started. So let's begin.
Yep.
This one caught my attention about a week and a half ago when it broke, and I'm still just trying to get my head around it. Nanotubes assemble. Rice introduces Tesla phoresis. I kept thinking this had to be like an April Fool's gag, but I've seen it too many places now, and I'm pretty sure this is real.
Right, and the date on this particular story is April 14th, so, you know.
Yeah. So if it was an April Fool's joke, it's just bounced anyway. You know, people are still carrying it on and writing it up new. But here's the story. Okay, scientists at Rice University have discovered that the strong force field emitted by a Tesla coil causes carbon nanotubes to self-assemble into long wires, a phenomenon they call Tesla phoresis. Now, I'm trying to think of any other story that combines two cool things that well in the history of this show.
Yeah, I mean, well, you start with nanotubes, which are awesome anyway, because you know, they are a diamondoid material, the strongest thing in you know, that we can think of, you know, is a diamond, right?
When we have a space elevator, we're going to be using these nanotubes, by golly.
That's right. But the problem has always been, Phil, how do you get long nanotubes to, you know, to build something like a space elevator? It's always been just theoretical because you can't put together long strings of nanotubes, right?
Right.
Well, until now, huh? So, and my first question is, Phil, why haven't we known about this before? How is it that this is just, a thing? I mean, surely someone had thought to apply an electrical current to nanotubes before, because people have always talked about nanotubes being something that we could build electronics from. So,
well, I'm sure that people have applied electrical currents to them before, but what you need is the strong field emitted by a Tesla coil. Okay.
Okay. So not just any
That's not just your usual plug it in at home in your 110 or 220. That is its own, you know, special. I mean, that's the other cool feature of this story, right? When you talk about combining two cool things. We've got the Tesla coil, famous obviously for its use in science fiction movies of the 30s and 40s and 50s. I mean, we're all familiar with seeing them from that. A device that, is that right? Those were used in that, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. And of course, if you've been to a science museum in the last 25 years, you've probably seen that thing that makes your hair stand on it. right?
Right. Exactly.
That's what we're talking about. So
you know, one of Nikola Tesla's little toys, this machine that basically, let me just read the definition: an electrical resonant transformer circuit that was invented by Nikola Tesla, and it uses it produces high voltage, low current, high frequency electricity, and apparently it is just exactly the right combination of those things to make carbon nanotubes self-assemble. And you know, to go back to your question, Stephen, you know, why hasn't anyone tried that? It's just, who would have thought, right?
Yeah,
who
would have
thought?
So.
Well,
yeah.
You know, did you ever hear Jim Gaffigan talk about fruitcake?
I love Jim Gaffigan.
It reminds me of that, okay?
Maybe I missed that one.
Well, he says, you know, fruitcake, it should be incredible, right? Fruit, good. Cake, great. You know, you put them both together. Right, so I mean, there's an awful lot of things in the world that can be combined, and you know, it just hadn't occurred to anyone to try this out yet. But
here's the thing, this one works. Yeah, well, it was something very cool about this. You know, obviously, Tesla is awesome and everything, but what makes this doubly cool to me is this genius. You know, late 19th century, early 20th century genius. Still delivering the future more than 70 years after he died, you know?
Yes.
I mean,
yep.
Awesome. You know, that to me is just awesome. What if it turns out that this is the thing that allows us to put together these long strings of nanotubes, not just for the space elevator, although, I mean, what would be more changing and than to allow us to do that? But, I mean, it could potentially be like the new – you know, the new revolutionary thing after plastics or something. You know, we could have a world that's built of nanotubes in so many ways.
You know,
it's precisely this.
Yeah, it's a great new way of manufacturing them. They have almost limitless applications outside. You know, I jump straight to space elevators, but there are so many things in material science, in manufacturing that can be done. I mean, we could be living in houses made out of carbon nanotubes. You know, we're wearing clothes, driving cars. I mean, there's so much potential application for these. There's all kinds of military applications. There's
my bulletproof button down is made of nanotubes.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those really transformative technologies. And yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head that Nikola Tesla gets to play a part in us moving there would just be too cool. I mean, it would be pretty awesome if someday, you know, sitting atop the space elevator was a city called Tesla City, and on top of that was one of those like lightning rod things he put down on Cheyenne Mountain. You know, it's just pulling up all the electricity from the whole planet.
Yeah.
I think that
would be. And we're radioing electricity from outer space using techniques that he thought of first. You know,
hold that thought, because we'll actually come back to that. But we got to move on because we got so many of these. Molecular mechanical computer designed 100 billion times more energy efficient than the best conventional computer. This, of course, comes from our good buddy Brian Wong at Next Big Future. And this was an interesting story. I read this. Ralph Merkel, Robert Freitas, and others have a theoretical design for a molecular mechanical computer that would be 100 billion times more energy efficient than the most energy efficient conventional green supercomputer. Removing the need for gears, clutches, switches, springs makes the design easier to build. Existing designs for mechanical computing can be vastly improved upon in terms of the number of parts required to implement a complete computational system. Only two types of parts are required: links and rotary joints. Links are simply stiff, beam-like structures. Rotary joints are joints that allow rotational movement in a single plane. So I don't know if you've ever read up on how we're going to make molecular computers. This is like a hot new design for a molecular computer, and this could have tremendous potential implications. Once again, we're taken back to the death of Moore's law, which becomes increasingly irrelevant when you've got molecular mechanical computers to rely on. That takes you through several more generations of Moore's law, I believe.
I guess,
and
so. You know, it's like yawn. You're talking a mere 12 orders of magnitude. You know, come on. Yeah, you know, impress me next time with next story, Phil. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Not much to see here.
Move along.
Basically, when the world is remade,
100 billion times more energy efficient.
Yeah, when the world is remade as computronium, this will actually be the process. Okay, now we can look and go, oh, okay, well, This is what they'll actually do. You know, basically, a mechanical computer made of molecules. This is not a new idea. This goes all the way back to Engines of Creation. And I've spoken to Ralph Merkel at the Foresight Gathering, the Vision Weekend, in the past, and talked to him about that computer years ago. And, you know, that's always been an idea that has been on his mind. And it looks like he and Robert Freitas are, you know, they're not letting it go. What I like is they're really taking it up a notch. Okay.
Yeah.
This idea that we've grown familiar with, they've taken it up a notch. And if I read the story correctly, they're actually working on, talking about how we can actually start putting one of these in place. This will be a game changer once we have it. And
right.
I can't wait. You know, I'm looking forward to the day when this takes over. Because we've talked about from CPUs to GPUs to, what were we talking about last week, RPUs, right?
Yeah.
And I think you made your point, which is this is 12 orders of magnitude more, smaller. And you gain speed on that. You gain the energy efficiency they're talking about here.
Yeah, and that's when we say efficient, more energy efficient, that's a point that some people might miss, is that when you're talking energy efficiency, you're also talking about computational power.
Exactly.
Because if you're able to produce more computation at less energy, then you get more computation, right, for the same amount of energy. So it's a currency that buys both things. So.
That's right. There's always going to be a trade-off between energy and computation. You know, how much you spend
right.
is going to get you so much, and you create that much more efficiency. Same amount of energy is going to give you basically 100 billion times more computation. It might not be that direct of a calculation, but let's say it's, let's say I'm off by a factor of 10 there, and you only get 10 billion times better computation. Oh, darn. Well,
yeah.
Not really a story here at all, then, is there? Okay, we've got to move on.
Absolutely. The next one is NASA feed goes down as Horseshoe UFO appears and ISS International Space Station live cam, sparking claims of alien cover up. Well, what's your thoughts, Phil? Should we play our tales of of the paranormal?
Definitely should have played tales of the paranormal. And I almost thought we'd just do this at the end. But you know what? Just when you're doing amazing stuff, you can just throw any amazing thing in any order. I think it's. It's fair to talk about any amazing thing you want. This is really cool. If you watch the video, I watched the video, and I'm like, did I miss it? I didn't see anything. And then I watched it again. I'm like, there's nothing happening in this video. And then they show like a close-up magnified thing.
Right.
And it's like way off in the distance in this view from the ISS camera. You do see this little object kind of appear on the horizon and sort of move, and then it's gone. And it's quite odd looking. And you look at it and you go, well, what is that object out there in space moving around like that? And I read the comments. Whenever you read something that has comments, it's a mixed bag whether you're going to get anything good out of the comments or not. But often in Slashdot,
right.
you'll get something good. And this was a Slashdot story. And almost immediately somebody's going, well, it's a reflection. And I looked at it and I thought, it doesn't look like a reflection. Really, isn't that a much more logical explanation than just about anything else? By Occam's razor, I'm going to say not as amazing as originally we thought it would be. I was really hoping that NASA was going to have to come out and say, that's it, they caught it, there it is.
Yeah, our bad, we've been covering this up since Roswell. Oh, well, we might as well tell everybody. Well, not so much, huh? So
I didn't think so. What I do take away from this, though, what I thought was interesting about this and why I thought it was worth mentioning is that if they were out there, the alien spacecraft that some folks seem to believe are, just flying around us all the time, right? These cameras from ISS, which are constantly feeding signals back to Earth, would have caught something by now, wouldn't they? Right? This little
yeah.
blip of a reflection thing shouldn't be the only time anything like this has ever come up. This should have happened hundreds or dozens of times by now. So I guess I'm being, let me tie it in. All right. What I'm saying is that the cloaking technology on these UFOs is truly amazing technology.
Okay.
That's my point. Sorry, I got to keep it with the theme here, right? You want to talk about amazing. How do they make it show up, you know, in somebody's sky, but you can't see it from space? That is just that's amazing technology right there. Okay.
Well, let's get to this next one here. Solar cells will be made obsolete by 3D. Help me with the pronunciation of that word. Rectennas? Aiming at 40 to 90% efficiency. Bill, what are we talking about here?
Okay, this is so cool because let's wind it back to our Tesla discussion. Just a few moments earlier, you know, we were talking about radioing electricity around. Well, the rectenna is the receiving end of that, okay?
Right.
A rectenna takes electromagnetic waves at optical frequency and turns them into electricity, okay? So, right now we have photovoltaic.
Which is an old idea. This is Nikola Tesla was experimenting with how to basically radio electrical power around.
There you go.
And with some success.
The electricity in the radio spectrum. So rather than, you know, photovoltaics are working on a heat energy principle, if I'm not mistaken, right? So you're warming up the surface, and that's creating the energy, and then through an interesting photosynthetic-like process, you're getting electricity out of that. This is a much more direct turning radio waves into electricity process. Okay, so it makes voltaics obsolete because we're grabbing the energy in a much more direct way with these. This device they say is currently only at 1%, but they think they can achieve a 40% broad spectrum efficiency. Which is going to make this much, much more. It's our best way of gathering solar energy ever found. If they can actually deliver on the.
To put it this way, like a solar cell converts a certain spectrum of the light to electrical energy. This would convert a much broader spectrum to electrical energy.
That's right.
Okay.
I mean, really, That's exactly it. And the solar cell isn't really converting electromagnetic energy into electricity, right? There's an intermediary thing happening, right, in there.
Okay.
But here, it's like one form of energy is actually being transmuted into another form of energy. So it's a much more direct process. But yes, they are making much better use of the spectrum, and it's going to be a lot cheaper than solar cells. So I think we can look for this technology as perhaps one of the game changers, even though photovoltaics is not, it's no slouch, right? It's been coming along tremendously well. And I don't recall, even Kurzweil in his predictions about solar energy mentioning this. Maybe he does.
Yeah, he never has, to my knowledge. Now, he's been talking, when he talks about things like the solar singularity and things, he's talking about the increased efficiency within normal photovoltaics, not
That's right. That's right. And
even what Nikola Tesla was doing back, 80, 90 years ago, with the radio transmission of power, there had to be a source of the power, Phil. I mean, there had to be some power station somewhere creating the energy and then radioing it out. This device is just, would power your home. On just the background radio waves that are existing in the universe, am I saying it right? There's no
background radio waves. It is energy from the sun. It's the electromagnetic energy from the sun. So
that's right.
Not just background noise. Although one day, who knows? We might get to that point. And it's half of the equation for what they've always talked about. Collecting solar power in space. The idea always there was, you collect all that energy. Originally, they were thinking with photovoltaics, but really, you just collect them with these. Not even have to convert that energy to anything, right? You just concentrate it. You just shoot a beam of that as electromagnetic energy down to the Earth. You have a receiver, and you're getting that energy that way too. So it's a really dazzling potential idea for how we can leapfrog a technology that is already growing at a spectacular clip.
One tenth the cost of conventional solar cells. And another thing, solar, there's a requirement for a high grade of silicon, which is apparently not that easy to come by. And this would eliminate the need for that, it would appear. So that's very, very cool. And this, I mean, you promised amazing, Phil. I think you delivered on this story because this is news.
It's a big one. It's a big one.
Yeah.
I think the computer is a big one too, and this one's a big one. This next one is cool, and I think amazing, but probably not as earth shaking. Okay. LG planning wafer thin flexible TV screen that you can roll up like a newspaper, and everybody, you've just got to click on the link and see this thing. Okay.
Because oh yeah, I mean we're
then
talking.
Then you'll say it's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's amazing. I'm reminded of Minority Report.
Yes.
You know, when they had the newspapers that were basically flexible screens that were so cheap apparently that people would just toss them away, just like a paper newspaper.
I don't know if we should explain what a newspaper is to some of the kids listening.
It's this thing we used to have, kids. That was made out of dead trees.
Actually, my children know we get a free one from the community association. That shows up on our curb every Thursday. They know what a newspaper is. It's a thing that shows up on the driveway that Dad puts into the recycling. That's what a newspaper is.
It goes straight from your stoop to the recycling half the time, I'm sure. Pretty much.
I glance at it once in a while. But anyhow, the death of the newspaper is neither here nor there. What's cool about this is you truly can roll this screen up. This is flexible. This is a technology we've heard about for years. Was coming, and now here it is. I don't know that it's quite to the commodity stage that they depict in Minority Report, where they'll just be printing this stuff out everywhere, and everything will be a TV screen. But you know, if the display on those are good, that's really going to revolutionize the television as a piece of furniture. Well,
even more important than the television. Yeah, even more important than what it would do for your television is what it would do for your iPhone. You could imagine, you pull your iPhone out of your pocket and you decide, you know what, I'm tired of looking at it on this size screen. And so you pull out from the side of your iPhone a larger flexible screen, actually pull it out of the case of your iPhone and make a screen that's the size of your iPad. To see a video on a larger screen. Things like that you could do with technology like this.
Absolutely. Of course, augmented reality will surpass that soon too. But that's fine.
True.
Let everything keep leapfrogging
Let's just bet on it all, man. Hey, let's do it all and let the future sort out which technology it chooses, right? But all of this stuff is cool And one thing I keep pointing out is that sci-fi always gets it wrong because science fiction typically is the world the way it is now plus one new technology that's just earth-shaking. Well, it's going to be the world as it is now plus, a thousand new technologies.
That's right.
Yeah.
So hopefully, by going through eight or nine of them here tonight, we give a taste, right, for how... things are really good.
Yeah, now you mix and mix to your taste, future, and that's that's the way to look.
Exactly right. Well, this next one is actually kind of related. This concrete fabric, scientists have discovered a way to make building structures from concrete fabric, an innovative way to build small enclosed spaces and tents. And you really have to look at this stuff to believe it, because it really does look like, some kind of cloth or, some kind of textile or something like that, but it's actually concrete. And, if your carbon nanotube bulletproof vest doesn't show up in time, Stephen, I recommend this as at least a good body armor.
Wearing concrete around might seem a little heavier, but this is cool. This is definitely cool. I definitely recommend everybody checking out this video. It's at Earth Spectacular, I believe.
It's on Facebook. I hope if you follow the link and you're not a Facebook person, you can still see it. I think probably it's one of those It's one of those publicly shared ideas. But, you know, the great thing about this is you can put a building up, call it a tent, call it a building, call it what you will. You can put a structure in place that can provide shelter to people, a really solid protective structure, much, much faster than...
Well, you can imagine how awesome it would be to be able to provide this in an area that there's been a disaster, and
right.
They need quick shelter, and you'd have something that would be a, looks like a very durable, you know, what it reminds me of is a MASH style, you know, tent. But, you know, they have people standing on top of it, people trying to burn it. You know, it's not, you know, flammable. It's strong. It's not like a tent. Once it's in place, it's a structure, isn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's got the advantage
of
a tent. You can transport it like a tent, fold it up, and build it and put it up quickly like a tent. But then once it's up, it's solid. It provides you the same kind of protection that you would expect from concrete, at least to some extent. I mean, you know, obviously it's not the same as if you built it out of cinder blocks, but it's very cool. And you got to check out the video. I think you want to be in one of those buildings with your flexible TV on the wall. I think that's unfold your house and then unroll your TV from LG. I think you're good to go.
Man, we still got more awesomeness. Let's get to it.
Oh, we gotta go quickly here. Okay, a PhD student invented a robot that can grow fruits and vegetables on Mars. Very proud of this Heather Hava, because she's a student right here in Colorado at the University of Colorado at Boulder, has invented two robots that can grow fruits and vegetables and monitor human health in space. What I love about this story is that all these little incremental pieces of infrastructure that we're going to need in order to colonize space, in order to really have the true, you know, commercial development of space, is just happening. You know, people are just doing it. She's just a college student, and she's putting together robots. We might not use these exact robots. In fact, I can say it with almost complete certainty we won't. But this work will have some bearing on probably what eventually gets used. And I think that if only to inspire somebody else to do the one, you know, or 10 generations from now, the one that really, of technology, not in time, that really makes it happen. So just really exciting to see that this kind of work is going on, that the university fosters this kind of thing, and that that people are really working on making it happen.
That's right. And, you know, when we get to Mars, we want to take with us the ability to produce food. This is a little silly, but, you know, the movie The Martian, I mean, that, you know, wouldn't it have been awesome if, you know, he had in place, you know, something like what the student is working on from the get-go? You know, I mean, it would have been perhaps a less exciting movie. You know, I'm surrounded by these hydroponic farms, so maybe I shouldn't worry so much about food. I'll just have to, you know, worry instead about the loneliness for a little bit. But other than that, I'm good. this is awesome, Phil.
And finally,
scientists
make impossible material by accident. This is on Gizmag. Scientists actually working on creating a new medium for drug delivery come up with this non-toxic magnesium carbonate with the most porous surface area of anything they have ever encountered. They've invented the ultimate sponge. They've invented this sponge that some would say could not exist. The total area of the pore walls of 1 gram of material would cover 800 square meters. Okay, so
you know what's funny about this? The reason they're calling it impossible in this article and the title of it is that had these researchers known all that they maybe should have known before they tried what they tried, they might not have tried it to begin with, because conventional wisdom was that what they did couldn't be done. It was like, you know, don't tell me what I can't do, and maybe I'll do it. Almost, it's neat. Well, it's how much more porous it's than what we'd had before. It's like
thousands of times. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This stuff is basically, to swing it back to the concrete fabric, this is going to be another potential really practical technology with really practical potential applications. Just like the concrete fabric we can use to build structures in emergencies, this is something that they can use to clean up oil spills, toxic dumps. It's just great for sucking stuff up.
And since it's non-toxic, it could be used in the human body, too, for drug delivery and things like that. You know, you take one pill and this stuff, you know, just hangs out in your body until you need the medicine and doles it out over a long period of time, perhaps. Something like that, right? Is that the idea? So that is pretty cool. So
and I would say amazing, wouldn't you, Stephen?
Yeah. Yes. Instead of pretty cool, let's go with amazing. Now this that is awesome. Phil, that's it. That's all we have time for.
Hey, we did amazing stuff, and we did more amazing stuff. Thank you all for being with us. We're going to be back again on Friday evening with an all-new show. And until next time, live to see it.